You're listening to Agriculture Today.
A lot of these countries who are off the list, they didn't really use AGOA very much to begin with, so there's not always a lot of interest. But I would just say that our office is open, and you know, we're active, and we make changes. We put people on, we take them off. We're not just sitting down. If people are going to actually make changes and progress, you know, we will do what we can to get them the benefits they should have. And if they go the other way, we'll take care of that too.
U.S. Trade Representative Jamison Greer talking about trade agreements with other countries. Now, USDA's Economic Research Service and the Foreign Ag Service now forecasting fiscal year 2026 ag exports at $176.5 billion, imports $205.5 billion. That would leave a projected $29 billion trade deficit for ag. But it is narrower than last year's $43.7 billion gap. The improvement uneven for crop producers. Corn export volume projected near 3.23 billion bushels. That's up about 270 million from last year. Export value, though, holding steady at 18.5 billion. Soybeans, the move is the other direction. Volume forecast 1.53 billion bushels, down about 344 from last year, while soybean export value falls to 18.6 billion. China, though, remains central to all of that pressure. Total U.S. ag exports to China projected at 12 billion. It's down from 16.2 billion last year. Mexico, though, leading all markets at 31.4 billion dollars. Stronger gasoline demand lifted ethanol blending to a 52-week high, even as ethanol production eased during the week that ended May 22nd. Ethanol production declined by 2%, roughly 45.74 million gallons per day. Output remained 3.1% above last year, 4% above the five-year average. Now, gasoline supplied to the market up over 5%, now at a 48-week high. Ethanol stocks increased slightly, running 11% above the five-year average. And exports, though, dropped 31.5%. So it shifts attention towards domestic blending demand as the stronger near-term market signal. U.S. avocado buyers saw sharply higher prices last week as Mexican supplies declined during the transition towards summer production. USDA reported average two-layer carton prices climbed nearly 48% in 2 weeks, from $25.61 up to $37.82. USDA data shows Mexican avocado movement fell from 65 million pounds to 48.6 million pounds in just 2 weeks. Well, specialty crop producers facing elevated input costs and market disruptions can apply for $1.6 billion in USDA assistance beginning today. USDA says the Assistance for Specialty Crop Farmers program intended to support growers affected during the 2025 production year. Payments based on eligible reported acreage, grouped by average crop revenue, Tier 1 crops, $650 per acre, Tier 2, get $225, Tier 3, $65, and beans and peas not covered by the earlier Farm Bridge Assistance Program qualify for $25 per acre. It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Mexico has been one of the big winners of American diversification from China and Asia.
Ambassador Jamison Greer, U.S. Trade Representative on Trade with Mexico.
While our trade deficit in goods has gone down over the past 12 months, the share of imports from Mexico has gone up. They've taken some of that. All that being said, you know, we would like to see a broader and more balanced distribution of that production, including in the United States. So what do we want to see? We want to see that deficit go down. I think that over the course of these negotiations, we are going to be talking about rules of origin in a way that enhances U.S. content in these goods. I think we'll be talking about external trade policies in terms of and Mexico has already done a lot of this on their own. You know, they've raised tariffs on non-FTA partners, particularly in Asia, because it's in Mexico's interest, right? Mexico competes with a lot of these Asian economies for the U.S. market, and so that's an area, I think, of common agreement that we should have. If we want North America to be more competitive and I want more production in the United States, I want to avoid a situation where some of these, you know, lower-cost, regulatory arbitrage jurisdictions in Asia where they have less of an opportunity to use Mexico or Canada as an export hub.
What's ahead for African nations and trade?
I would say there's an interest on all sides in making this a program that has more benefits for the United States, has more concrete outcomes for the African countries in moving them and helping them develop in a way that ties them closer to the United States and doesn't incentivize them to go a different direction. Those are the kinds of things I'm thinking about. We do think about rules of origin. I also don't want Africa to be a way station for Asian components. That's not really what I want. And I don't think that's in the interest of Africa either, by the way. I think if they're going up the value chain, then that's good for them.
The U.S. Meat Export Federation is asking the U.S. Trade Representative to look at how some African nations are restricting imports of U.S. beef and pork. USMEF Director of Export Services Jim Remchek explains.
The Africa Growth and Opportunities Act, AGOA, is intended to incentivize two-way trade and authorizes the president to designate sub-Saharan African countries for duty-free treatment. The United States Trade Representative, USTR, is looking for comments from the public on how the Africa Growth and Opportunities Act has been implemented so far, and if it has worked, if it is not, areas where it could possibly be utilized in a different way. We see tremendous opportunity on the African continent for red meat exports, and AGOA benefits in the past have mainly been suspended in an effort to advance human rights or worker rights or political reforms. However, AGOA has not generally been utilized to leverage improved market access for U.S. agricultural products, even though it was intended as a tool for that purpose, to facilitate that two-way trade.
In comments to USTR, USMEF listed some specific trade challenges.
South Africa, over 10 years ago, agreed to lift a ban on U.S. pork. However, South Africa has continued to impose unscientific trade barriers due to porcine reproductive and respiratory syndrome, PRRS. So we are encouraging South Africa to adopt a science and risk-based approach and requirements in line with their WTO commitments for the Nigerian market. All fresh, non-processed U.S. red meat is currently ineligible. It's an unscientific ban, but we do see it as a tremendous growth area. And again, we think that pulling the strings on the AGOA angle could possibly give us some leverage. We're encouraging USTR to consider sanctioning or suspending Nigeria's AGOA benefits until this ban is lifted.
I'm John Harith.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Yeah, I do think there's, you know, some food inflation that the consumer's taking on, and thinking about where they're putting those dollars in the basket is noteworthy, right?
Brian Ernest with Kobe.
You know, if we're thinking about what's going on the grill, typically we're thinking about retail more than we are food service. And you know, with that aspect of it, I kind of think of now beef is different than it was 10, 15 years ago. The quality that the producer in the U.S. today is bringing to the consumer for kind of our steak cut items, you're seeing a lot more choice in prime grade product that's making its way to the retail and the grocery store. And the consumer has noticed this, and they're continuing to come back with that aspect really kind of in mind. And when I put that together with how the consumer is, you know, maybe taking on some more inflation and, you know, thinking about where they're spending their dollars, overall food spending as a percentage of total consumer goods, relatively low in the meat side of it, while prices have been rising, you know, still a small portion of their overall basket. So in that aspect, I think, you know, there's probably room there that the, you know, the consumer, there's still some holding power, at least kind of this early portion of the summer. So I look at some of the data that's going on there, you know, retail sales data, and it has kept up surprisingly strong despite some of those inflationary pressures. And that's really the consumer, I think, kind of telling us that protein is having a moment with them, and it's got holding power. So this, you know, optimism despite where otherwise we'd be a little bit concerned with what's going on there.
And what about beef on dairy crosses?
I'd argue that, you know, the utilization of beef, traditional beef genetics in the dairy system has positioned dairy as somewhat of a different source of, you know, raw material, for lack of a better word, for beef production in general. And this is a relatively new phenomenon, and in my mind, you know, thinking about maybe the last 5 years, there's been a pretty dramatic change in the utilization of beef genetics in reproduction in the dairy side of the business. So that, I think, you know, providing a meaningful change in terms of what's available to the consumer through dairy production. And here, I think this is, again, something that has holding power when we look over the next decade or so. Definitely something to consider when we think about the availability of beef, the you know, the overall size of the dairy industry, the amount of available animals there, probably not going to change that much over the next 10 years. But certainly the utilization of technology there is something that probably has a big impact of what's going to be available to the beef supply stream maybe 5 years from now than what it was 15 years ago. You know, so this certainly an important aspect, and I trace it back to really the work that's been done in the traditional beef cattle supply side, where, you know, 20 years ago or 25 years ago, the traditional beef cattle, you know, rancher was making decisions about kind of long-term planning of what beef should look like in the U.S. in terms of production. And that's shown up in a dramatic shift in the genetic makeup of the U.S. cattle supply today versus what it was 25, 30 years ago, to the betterment of what the product is that the consumer is seeing today, and they're paying for it. They're recognizing it, and they're voting with the dollars today. That really, you know, plays into the whole theme of what's going on, what we're seeing at the shelf at retail for beef.
It's Agriculture Today.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Here's the difference is the U.S. is going to have tariffs.
Talking trade, could we see a trans-Pacific partnership type deal ahead? Ambassador Jameson Greer.
I mean, even with somebody like Mexico or other countries that are in our own hemisphere, we're going to have tariffs. As long as we have a giant trade deficit, we're going to have tariffs, right? I mean, listen, maybe, you know, years down the road, if all of this has worked itself out, you know, maybe you can have a different situation. My sense, though, is if we can come to good terms with Mexico and others in the region on external tariffs, it makes it easier to give preferential treatment to folks in the region. I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, frankly, for national security reasons, I want to have our supply chain sourced from this hemisphere, right? From North America. That's where we want to have it. I mean, just imagine, I mean, we all lived through COVID and we couldn't get certain things from Asia, right? We couldn't get chips. And so we couldn't sell the cars. We couldn't make the cars. These are all serious problems, so whether it's a pandemic or a conflict or other kinds of things. So regardless of that, we want to have supply chains here as much as possible. And so that does mean that if we can have a group of countries that are more aligned with, you know, our type of external trade policy, it's much easier to say, all right. So I think that there is a world where that happens, whether it's really formal or something that organically develops with our trade policy.
What about the future of the USMCA? Mexico and Canada, could they be separate agreements?
You know, the team right now is in Mexico, my team. And they're negotiating with Mexico on a bilateral basis. I speak with some regularity to my Canadian counterparts. Our sense is that we have, with Canada, you know, some trade challenges, which, you know, to some people, you know, some people might think, oh, those are just irritants. To us, they're significant. And the reality is we've spent the past year and a half going to countries telling them we have to have some level of tariff on the globe to deal with this giant deficit we're dealing with, to try to reshore, et cetera. And most countries have, you know, I know grudgingly, but they've said, we understand your policy. We understand, so we're going to negotiate with you. We're going to remove some of these tariffs and non-tariff barriers, et cetera. You know, Canada's approach has been different. They, like China, retaliated against the United States. Two countries in the world retaliated against us, People's Republic of China and Canada. So they're just in a different spot, and it's hard to see necessarily where that ends. I will say, you know, we have trade in energy and minerals and other things, fertilizers between the U.S. and Canada that really has not been affected. It's been untouched. That's gone without any trouble. I think those are areas of you know, common economic benefit. I think when it comes to, you know, some of these manufactured goods, we have a different view. I mean, think about, you know, why do we make cars in Canada? The simplified view, which I share, is that in the 60s, Canada did something very Trumpian, and they said, if you're going to sell cars in Canada, the big three, you should be making here in Canada. And the big three were big, right? So I'd call them the big three. They said, that's fine, we'll put some plants up there, and they did it. And it's grown up that way, right? This is not like it was some, you know, domestic Canadian industry from time immemorial. It was something that we did because the Canadians said, if you're going to sell here, you have to build here. And we want to build here. If you're going to sell here, we want you to build here. So I think on some of these issues, it's going to be a challenging negotiation. But in some sectors of the economy, it has been fine and it will be fine.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
In most years, we'd be coming out of May into June, and we have had in the last several years the market get to the place where it's decided not to worry about production prospects anymore for corn.
Kansas State grain economist Dan O'Brien.
And have actually in the earliest time frames in about this, these dates where we're at here about the last week of May, when we're really not worried about prospects, we've started to go sideways to lower into harvest, and then just have the possibility that there might be some a weather scare or something. But I don't sense that's happened yet. We did have some, as we talked about with the corn futures earlier in our discussion, we are down from highs, but I don't see any panic selling. Again, Dease corn 482. You're not down to 450 or 440 or 430. So we still have issues to deal with. And as we'd mentioned, probably the acreage report and ongoing crop prospects all at play. Soybeans typically in the last few years have had more of a South American influence to them as we get out into May, June, July. And, some of our highest bids actually have come before South American exports start up, and we did have a pretty healthy time of soybean exports prior to that. This year, the mitigating factor, of course, is U.S.-China and the trade agreements, and whether China follows through on their commitments to buy, and those commitments are large enough that China had made that it has competitors such as Brazil and Argentina recalculating a little bit to see how if they're displaced in their normal, if their sales to China are displaced, then where do they go? In this last week, we have soybean exports about 21 million bushels. I need about 18 to meet the USDA's projection for this marketing year. It doesn't seem like we're having a great big run at this moment, but again, what I have heard of that situation for beans anyway is that we'll probably see a strong run of whatever Brazil has for their export movement, and then come back to the U.S. at the end of that time frame when Brazil is strong, and then see what buys we have, and by that time we could have the U.S. soybean crop coming on. If it's a good crop, then that'd fall right into the hands of buyers like China. So we'll see how that all works out this year.
Kansas State livestock economist Glenn Tonser.
This past week was pretty flat or steady, depending on which market we might quote here. AMS called the Friday 5 market, fed cattle market at 260, which I would say was flat and very consistent tone with the week before. AMS called the feeder cattle market steady to 10 bucks higher, depending on exactly where in the country and what weight class we're talking about. Here in Kansas, Pratt specifically, there's two lots that were higher than the week before. 107 head weighing 876, went for 351. A little larger lot, 158 head weighing 965, went for 348. Both of those would be up about $5 on the week. So cash trade was flat to up this past week. Choice is 391 on Friday, up about $1 for the prior week. Select is 383, down $1. So neither one of those are major movers. But what I will highlight is, I believe last time I was on here with you, you know, we were talking about a very narrow choice select spread. Does that mean what it used to mean and so forth? Historically, we see that grow going into 4th of July in particular, and it is growing as we speak. So that's consistent with past behavior is why I do that call out. You know, at $8, it's wider than it was before. There's been years before it had been closer to 20, so it may well widen a fair amount. But to remind our listeners, we probably have more cattle grading prime than select this year. So the choice select spread doesn't represent as many pounds as it once did. So we probably don't need to overreact to that quite as much as we have in the past.
Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
This week, we're excited to announce $65 million in the SIG program, Conservation Innovation Grant.
Colton Buckley is the new chief of the Natural Resources Conservation Service.
We're going to have $50 million on SIG on-farm trials. So this is work directly with producers and partners to build out conservation implementation and kind of the next generation of tools to support American agriculturalists, as well as $15 million for SIG Classics. And since 2004, the agency has awarded over 2,000 projects, investing more than $600 million. Some of the recent project highlights include things like water quality improvements and drainage financing tools, mobile drip irrigation innovations, particularly in Kansas, cooperative nutrient management models in California, paddock track grazing measurement technology, and these projects contribute to NRCS practice standards, new conservation technologies, and measurable conservation improvements.
It's actually two programs under one umbrella.
So it's a two-part program, yes, sir. So there's Classic, which is the priorities this fiscal year are going to be water management, water quality, soil habitat improvement. And then there's actual on-farm trials for irrigation, water management and technology, grazing land, soil health demonstration. So SIG is a program here at the agency that does kind of the research science implementation out of the Classic. We're looking at the trade schools, technical universities, land grants, nonprofits. Pretty much it's open to everyone except for foreign entities and governments to apply. And then on-farm trials are actual demonstrations on landowners' private property to support these new technologies and tools in conservation.
What kind of practices are we trying to see?
So we're looking for things to support irrigation, water management as we go through a rough drought throughout the country and have for a couple of years now, in support of nutrient management and grazing lands to support the regenerative efforts that producers across the country are coming to the table to re-engage with, as well as soil health demonstration.
Says the investment is towards the future of farming.
I mean, when we look at the average age of a farmer rancher in the nation, and over the next 15 years, we'll have the largest land transfer with a lot of new and beginning farmers or folks like me one day going back to take over the family place. We've got to make sure that the toolbox here at NRCS with our conservation practice standards are best up to date for direct producer implementation. And the way we do that in the early adoption system and developing these technologies to make sure that while it's science and data driven, it applies well on the landscape is through a conservation innovation grant.
And what's the focus moving forward?
The main focus we have here is keeping American working lands in American working hands. And what does that mean? This nation loses 5,000 acres a day in the continental United States of productive farmland, 1,200 roughly in Texas a day nationwide. 2,000 of that 5,000 is prime farmland. We've got to be able to build tools to keep working lands in working hands through the conservation easement program, through streamlining conservation practice standards. And so any individual who's a private landowner, farmer, rancher, private forester, what have you, that crosses into the threshold of an NRCS, a local county, parish, or territory office, receives complimentary service and technical assistance, as well as the ability for programmatic assistance to support their operation and their bottom dollar, to champion national security efforts, food security, national security, as we all know, to champion rural economies, and to make sure that we build the next generation of American agriculturalists and American conservationists hand in hand.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.